will be what to do. Applied generally, this means don't do what the society is doing. Don't do what is commonly accepted. The majority may act this way. That does not make it very smart. That doesn't mean there won't be long-term problems from it. We've seen in Abram's life biography, he keeps going back and forth, back and forth. Now, close to God, and then he goes down into Egypt and not trusting God for the famine. Do what everybody else did. They went down into Egypt without asking God. And then he goes up to Bethel again, up to the house of God. Now he's going to go back down in Genesis 16 and do what everybody else does at that time, try to fix it in a very, very strange way. Fortunately, we don't have these types of activities now, like slavery and polygamy. Wow, we're in better shape. As bad as it seems, we're still in better shape than what you have here, but this is what society did. And we will start the introduction to the story in Genesis 16 and just look at verse 1. Now Sarai, going to be named Sarah shortly, but Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. Just the introduction. Abram had been down into Egypt, and he thought he could fix the problem himself with the famine, and he went down in there, and this is probably where she came from. The Pharaoh was giving them lots of gifts. Probably here's this slave girl, and her name is Hagar. That is a Hebrew name, which it's fitting means flight, run away. Because they end up leaving Egypt, but she's also going to eventually take a flight from the family in a few more chapters and be gone. So one thought is, if he hadn't made problem number one, he wouldn't have problem number two. He didn't consult God in the famine and went down into Egypt. This is where Hagar came from, and now it's going to be problem number two. So sometimes a activity can be forgiven, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have consequences. Sometimes the consequences are not all taken away. And the consequences of going down into Egypt for the famine and not consulting God, the consequences is here she is, and now there's going to be problem number two. So sometimes sin number one makes problem number two. And it might be forgiven, but still got troubles that can happen. So here she is, and now we continue in verses 2 and 3. So Sarai said to Abram, "Now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go in to my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her." Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. After Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abram's wife Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as his wife. We have a situation here of God's promises are taking a while. 10 years, God made a promise. 10 years later, hasn't happened yet. That's why we read the verse on waiting. Sometimes it takes a while for God's promises to come true, and the best thing to do is to wait on them. Once again, they're going to be in a hurry and try to fix it themselves and make it worse. And they're wondering if they haven't misunderstood God's promise. In the previous chapter, was told Abram would have an heir, and it would not be from the worker's family, like Eliezer, the servant. And now they're wondering, it's taken too long for the promise to be fulfilled, so maybe he'll have a child, but Sarah will not be the mother. There's their thinking. So they're not going to wait for the promise to be fulfilled. Well, best to wait. Like Psalm 27:14, another one is Isaiah 40:31, those that wait in the Lord will gain new strength. That's the one that has the picture of the eagle. rise up and fly again. So sometimes when things don't happen fast, kind of still best to wait. That would be the way it would be with God's promises to us, particularly about the end times. You're going to fix it all later, but maybe not yet. And here they said, going to have a child, and they've waited 10 years and don't have it yet. They're going to wait a while longer, by the way, as the story goes on, but didn't wait. No more waiting. Try to fix it themselves. Now, again, this is what the world did. This is what they did. Polygamy and slave girls. This is what they did. Now, at least we don't have that happening in our time, but this is what they did. I've been trying to keep up with archaeology. There are three ancient sources that are mentioned in modern books on updated archaeology. Some are 2020. The latest is 2013. There are three of them. The Assyrian law at that time is a wife can buy a slave girl. If she has a baby, they can throw the slave girl away and keep the baby. How nice. Code of Hammurabi and Nuzi. So there's three ancient tablets. Go get a slave girl, have a baby. In some cases, just throw her away if you're done. Well, we don't have that temptation, either one. But the modern lesson might be the fact that most people do something doesn't make it very smart. You know, we could add it doesn't make it right, doesn't make it smart. So, people on the broad way to destruction, there's lots of them. We have that in our time. Actually, it does not matter what the poll says, what people think is moral. Doesn't matter. God decides what's moral. And by the way, if we disagree with God, and even if it is a majority, it'll still make a mess. It'll make a mess over time. Not just because of the Supreme Court vacancy, but the Supreme Court always comes to mind because long time ago, Supreme Court Justice said, quote, morality is the majority vote of a nation with the biggest army. That's a common quote when this comes up. The majority get to decide. No. They were doing this back then. It seems really weird to me. Really, really wrong. Polygamy and girl slavery and throw her away when you're done. That's what the majority believed in. So, number one, wait on the Lord when the promise hasn't happened yet. And number two, the fact that a lot of people do something doesn't make it very, very smart. We don't need to spend a long time on polygamy, but I could review again Genesis 2, quoted by Jesus. For this cause, a man shall leave father and mother and be married to his wife. They two shall be one flesh. So the pattern is male-female monogamy. That was God's pattern. In the Bible, homosexuality is so far off, it's never considered anything but punishment in the Old Testament. Punishment does not carry into the New Covenant, but the ethics does. It's considered so far out of bounds of the original pattern, it doesn't even qualify. Polygamy was never God's intent, but what he does with it in the Bible is he lets it happen and show what a mess it is. And it was a mess in the Bible stories, starting with Sarah and Hagar, Leah and Rachel, Hannah, and her name was Peninnah. They're all fights. Solomon's 1,000 wives made a mess of things for him. Not in the Bible, but the persons in the Bible. King Herod, when Jesus was born, he had all these wives. He ended up all fighting each other, and he actually killed some of his own kids. So every time there is a Bible story about it or a historical story about it, it is a mess. So I think God puts the stories in there to show us it's a mess. He did not open up a pit and throw them in it. He did not send a lightning bolt, but it's always a mess. In the New Testament, a leader in a church has to be the husband of one wife. Now, then one wonders what happens when you have like Muslim converts in other countries. We don't have it that much here, but Muslim converts in other countries, that kind of thing. But wait on the Lord for promises that are slow. Don't necessarily do what the majority of people are doing. It's kind of a mess. I bet they're going to go ahead. And now verse 4. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. So what's surprising or new about that? And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong done me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me. And Abram said to Sarah, behold, your maid is in your power. Do what is good in your sight. So Sarai treated her harshly, and she fled from her presence. Hagar became pregnant, and in cases of polygamy, they usually don't get along. That's all these Bible stories. That's modern, in Muslims. I've met two of them over the years that are in polygamy families. One is American. They're from Utah. I actually met her. And then another one in Africa that was an adult son that had his Muslims. His dad was married to three or four women, and neither one of them were doing real good. Just really hurt on the inside. So we don't have that temptation, so we can go on. What for us, Sarai would illustrate is blame shifting. True enough, he went along with it, but we have blame shifting. And that's very, very common. Now, she's the one that started it. She's the one that caused it. In the end, when it's a mess, she shifts the blame. So I think that's very, very common. Sounds like Eve in the garden, the snake you gave me, and then Adam in the garden, the woman you gave me. And here we have other blame shifting. I think this custom was just terrible, particularly the part of keeping the baby and throwing the slave girl away, like the Assyrians did. It might be the majority, but that's what they did, and not very good. And she's going to shift the blame. Now, she didn't throw Hagar out yet. That's coming in another story where they can't get along again. Didn't throw her out yet, but Hagar was so mistreated, it says, that she left on her own. And I don't know what the hard work was. Remember, she's pregnant, so hard work and mistreatment. And Hagar decides to leave and goes, as we read next verse, on the way to Shur, which means she's going to Egypt and going back home. Let's read that in verse 7. Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. He, the angel of the Lord, said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, where have you come from and where are you going? And she said, I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress Sarai. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself to her authority. Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, I will greatly multiply your descendants, that they shall be too many to count. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are with child. You shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael. Because the Lord has given heed, he listened, to your affliction. Predictions, he will be a wild donkey of a man, moving all around and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he will live to the east of all his brothers. Well, the fact that the world does a lot of stuff doesn't mean it's the smart thing to do or the right thing to do, and slave girls are not the right thing to do, and polygamy is not the right thing to do, and they're going to do it, make mistakes. Hagar, naturally, is they don't get along with Sarai and mistreatment, and she leaves. Then the angel of the Lord appears unto her. Quite a few of these in Genesis. I remember preaching Genesis before, and the problem is it repeats. So I'm not sure what to do about that, but it will repeat. The angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord started in Genesis 16, but it's going to be 21, 22, and 31. And if we think about the rest of the Old Testament, it's like the burning bush with Moses and Gideon. The angel of the Lord appears unto Gideon. The angel of the Lord appears unto Samson's parents. So it's over and over and over. It's going to say return and go back and submit to her, even if she's mean. That'll come up again. Sometimes authority is mean, but they haven't asked us to do anything that's evil. And if we're under that authority, now we're free Americans, so sometimes we can quit. But sometimes in the Bible, if we can't get out of it, and the authority is mean, not immoral, but mean, they have to kind of go along with it. That's going to be an example here. However, one thing I'd like to say is children that may be born in unholy circumstances, the children are still holy. So God is going to take care of Ishmael. Maybe it should not have happened in the first place. But once there's a child, the child is still holy. So the descendants of this child will be too many to count. Ishmael is the first unborn baby in the Bible where God names them before they're born. He's going to John the Baptist, he's going to Jesus, but here's the first one, Ishmael. Shema, like in Deuteronomy 6, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Shema means hear. Ishmael means God hears. So God must have listened to Hagar's prayers about this yet unborn baby. She's pregnant. Abram and Sarah would have an heir, but the promised heir would be through Isaac, and not Ishmael. But God is still going to bless Ishmael. So a child that maybe was born in unholy circumstances, he still is holy, and he's going to get all these blessings. Predicted of him, though, him and his descendants will be kind of wild. We would say Bedouins. Move around, live in tents, move around all the time. They will live east of the brethren, verse 12, and then coming in Genesis 25:18, east of Egypt, we would say Sinai and Arabia. And indeed, the Arabians still think, tracing their line back to Abram, sometimes through Ishmael, sometimes through Midian. Now they're all merged, and the Arabs will say Abram is the ancestor, and some of them came through Ishmael, and some of them came through Midian. The Ishmaelites became Arab. Genesis 25, getting ahead, but when Sarah dies, Abram will remarry Keturah, and they will have Midian. So Midianites and Ishmaelites are technically kind of cousins, but they're all merged together. They're all Arab tribes. And when we read about Joseph is sold to the slave traders, one reference will call them Ishmaelites. The other reference will call them Midianites. But Abram's the dad. Some from Hagar, some from Keturah, all lost now. But these are the Arabs. And the Bible would indicate that, so would they. They would say so. don't want to study Muslims too much, but when they have Mecca and they have this little square black box and they all go around it, they think Hagar is buried in there. And Ishmael. I think they're in there. And that's their big thing. But they do agree that they come from Ishmael. And fights all the time, right? Back to submitting to unfair authority. Go home. And she's been mean, but go home. There are times in the Bible where we have to submit to unfair authority. Now, if the unfair authority asks us to do evil, then we can disobey. But sometimes the unfair authority is not asking us to do to break a higher law of God. And being free people, we can sometimes quit jobs and that kind of thing and move on. But in this circumstance, it's go back. Yes, she's mean, but go back. Most of the time in the Bible, this is the government illustration. Submit to the government, even if it's mean, but not asking us to do evil. There are cases in Paul's writing where technically it's masters and slaves applied to employers and employees. Now, we're not slaves, so we can always quit a job. But applied in that situation is if you're going to work there and they're mean, well, they're not asking you to do evil, they're coming to put up with it. As soon as if we decide to go ahead and work there. Other situation is families. I still think of the, he's old enough to drive, but the boy that I found on the street that ran away from his parents in Lubbock. And I said, are you in danger? No. They're mean. I said, you better go back. Because it doesn't say submit to people unless they're perfect. So if you're not in any danger, and they're not asking you to do evil, and, say have to work for them, or you're too young to be on your own, you might have to put up with it for a while, and that's kind of what's going here on here. God would bless the baby that's coming. Abram loved him, it will later say in Genesis 21. He loved this child. Sarah will put up with it for a while. Then, as the story will go, as they get older, and Ishmael is a teenager, and Isaac is a toddler, Ishmael will make fun of him. And that's a story that's coming, and that's where there will be a separation. I think that's when we will also read Galatians 4, but I'll make a reference to it here. In Galatians 4, Paul uses this as an allegory or a figure of speech. Ishmael is an illustration of trying to get God's promise by works. The promise is there will be a son, and they think they're going to work it out. They think they're going to work and fix it themselves. And Paul takes that story and he uses an illustration of working to get salvation, which doesn't work. He says it's a picture of the temple in his time where it's all works and people working to get God's promise of salvation. Well, that's not God's way, nor was it God's way in this story. And that's how Paul will use it. Paul will also say the Hagar story shows an illustration of the religious works system making fun of people that believe in faith. They're not going to accept faith alone. They believe you're saved by works, even works of the flesh, which he regards as the Hagar and Abram story, and they're going to make fun of people that believe in faith alone. His further illustration will be, and that system should be thrown out, as Ishmael will be eventually thrown out. He's telling us in our thinking, throw out, getting the promise by works. throw out the idea that we get God's promise of salvation by works. And this illustration here is showing how people work to get God's promise, and that's not God's way. Now we can go back to the story in Genesis 16 and read the last few verses. Genesis 16, verse 13 through the end. Then God called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God who sees." For she said, "Have I even remained alive after seeing him?" Thought people would die that saw a glimpse of God. Therefore the well was called Beer, that's well, Lahai Rohai, the well of one who sees. Behold, it's between Kadesh and Bered. She's pregnant. Now, verse 15, the child comes. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son, whom Hagar bore Ishmael. God hears. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to him. Now, Hagar says it is God who sees, and Hagar said this was God who is talking to her in the angel of the Lord. And if it were Hagar alone, we might say she's making a mistake, but do notice that Moses, in introducing it in verse 13, the Lord who spoke to her. So Moses is agreeing, and there'll be quite a few like this, where the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament is an appearance of God. Now Jesus said that no one has seen God the Father any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has revealed him. So in the Old Testament, when God appears, it's not God the Father. No one has seen God the Father. In the Old Testament, these are appearances of God the Son. So he got the name Jesus, or Jesus, when he was born in Bethlehem, but he was always God the Son, and these appearances are appearances of God the Son, even in the Old Testament. One can think Melchizedek was the first, but then you have to say this is not a short-term appearance of Melchizedek. He was the king of Salem or Jerusalem, so he was there for a long time. So he's a permanent rule of Melchizedek is one thing that makes me wonder if he's not just a type of Christ and not really an appearance. But here we have an appearance of God the Son, short-term. There are hints of the Trinity in the Old Testament. Now, a person that really hates the Trinity, just looking at the Old Testament, might find some things that they object to, but there are hints of it in the Old Testament. We already referred to the plural, "Let us make man in our image." God is the creator. He's not talking to a group of angels. Let us make man in our image. Plurals. But also these appearances of the angel of the Lord, who is also called the Lord and has to be God the Son. Also, there are times in the Bible where the Lord talks to the Lord. One person of the Godhead talks to the other person of the Godhead. And these are Old Testament verses. Jesus-like, Psalm 110, verse 1, "The Lord said to my Lord." The Lord talked to David's Lord. Two Lords. The Lord talked to David's Lord. "Sit on my right hand, I'll make your enemies a footstool under my feet." So the Lord is talking to the Lord. Zechariah 3, verse 2 has another one. We have like a courtroom, and God the Father is the judge. And then the angel of the Lord, God the Son, is the defense attorney. And Zechariah 3, 2, "The Lord said unto Satan, the Lord rebuke you." The Lord, the defense attorney, said to Satan, God the judge, rebuke you. So you have cases in the Old Testament where the Lord is talking to the Lord. And you have cases in the Old Testament where the angel of the Lord appears, but no one has seen God the Father. So Jesus is in the Old Testament. Theophanies, often because it's interpreted as him, called Christophanies. A related thought is, will we see God? More than now, I think, but maybe not fully. Hagar was right in Exodus 33:20. God told Moses, "You cannot see my face, for no man can see me and live." And there's a lot of them in the Bible. Gideon was the same way, that thought if they would see an appearance of God, they would die. Well, evidently not. It's kind of like partial. Like he said to Moses, or we have in the hymn, you see the backside and you're covered with God's hand, you can't see fully. We will see more, love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, for now we see in a mirror darkly, but then face to face, we will see more. Can we see all of God? My opinion right now is probably not. I'm not sure it's possible, even in heaven, to see all of God more than they did, you know, more than the Bible characters did, but you can decide on that. But 1 Timothy 6:15-16, King of kings and Lord of lords, who dwells in unapproachable light, who no man has seen or can see. So she's kind of thinking right to say, I've seen God, if I'm not going to die. Well, they saw God partially. Maybe more is coming. Well, let me review. This is a strange story, and I'm glad it's not a common habit now or temptation. Polygamy, at least not in Western civilization. That ended with the exile, by the way. When God took the tribes off and dragged them off for 70 years, when they came back, they didn't do polygamy. They didn't worship idols anymore, even in Jesus' day. The thought is King Herod did polygamy, but he wasn't really racially all Jewish. The Jewish people did not do polygamy and did not worship idols after the exile. It fixed it. Sometimes things like that fix things. So we're not tempted with slavery or polygamy, but the lesson for us would be the fact that society does something doesn't make it very smart. The majority do this. Okay, it's still crazy. It still will make a mess. Another lesson is sometimes we have to submit to mean authority. Either can't get out of it, or they haven't, you know, asked us to do anything sinful. They're just mean people. Sometimes have to kind of put up with it, like she's going to. Also, the Paul's illustration, works to get God's promise don't work. A work to get God's promise doesn't work, and Paul applies that to salvation, which is not by works. Let's pray together, please.